Welcome to the Admin Admin Podcast, the podcast for people working in the real world of IT. If you're a sysadmin, working on a help desk, a network engineer, an IT consultant, a computer tech who wants to know more about servers, or even if you want to get a job in the IT field, this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Al.
And I'm Andy, and welcome to episode one of the Admin Admin Podcast. This is the podcast that we'll come back to after 100 episodes or so and say, oh my God, how bad were we back then? So if you're listening to us from sometime in the future, then hello to you. Anyway, we both come from the wonderful country of England, separated by two coasts, I may add. Myself is in the northwest of the country, on the Wirral Peninsula, which is pretty close to Liverpool. And if you happen to be into golf, then next month's the Open Golf Championship will be happening just a few miles from where I live. Myself, I own a computer consulting repair company. We do small business servers with maybe up to 5-10 workstations, and also do home computers, home visits, and general repairs, virus removals, things like that. Now, over to Alistair. What do you do during the day?
Yeah, well, I work for an IT consultancy company, so I mainly work on servers during the day, doing consultancy, coming up with proposals to solve people's problems, and helping out on the kind of like third line on the help desk. So if any major problems come up, they come and see me. So how are you, Andy? How's it going? What sort of day have you had?
Oh, not too bad, not too bad. Well, saying that, had a bit of a nightmare on the first job today, with an encrypted drive. It wasn't what's that one called? It's a very common one.
TrueCrypt.
It wasn't TrueCrypt. It was actually one of HP's own drive encryption systems that the client had already put onto the machine. The problem they had today was with AutoCAD. Now, they were trying to install AutoCAD after a lot of messing about that they did. They finally got it working, until they tried to do a save of their new drawings, at which point the whole AutoCAD crashed, not responding. They've been messing about with it for a few days, eventually called me in to have a look. Now, I was looking at it for a while. Actually tried to uninstall and reinstall a program, thinking that that would fix it. As it was reinstalling, it came up with an error, and I don't know what it was. It was just one of those error messages that just made me think, that's an encrypted drive problem. Realizing they did have an encrypted drive, this took an hour or so. It was one of those jobs. I thought, there's something about this drive encryption which is preventing this from installing. Having a quick Google around, I managed to find lots of other people who had the same problem. And the solution, which was a good one actually, was to change, or temporarily at least, change the default Windows temp directories onto a drive which wasn't encrypted. After I read that, I thought, now that's a good idea. Tried it, and it worked straight away. So, in many ways, it was a couple of hours lost. But in another way, it was a lesson well learned, and a good solution. Right. So if anyone else has that problem, then try that. Change the temp directory. So what have you been doing today? Any problems for you, or did it all go smoothly?
Yeah, it's like one of those days where I should have got out the wrong side of bed. Had to be up early to get on site for 8 o'clock. We had one of our customers had a new lease line put in. They've been running on old ADSL connection for the last 2 years, and it's been dog slow. They connect via VPN to a terminal server, so their application is in the cloud. So we were using an app, a little firewall called a Microtik, and I got on site for 8 o'clock. First of all, no one was there at 8 o'clock to let me in, so that's a good start. Finally got let in, and went to start my laptop in, plugged it into the network, and the little application you have to run to configure the little Microtik, you'd load up, but you know when it was like it puts it on the wrong screen. In the office I have my laptop docked and I have two screens, and it was on the other screen and it wouldn't let me move it onto my laptop screen. I even attempted to attach another a screen to it and it still wouldn't see it, so I had to uninstall the application and reinstall it. Once I'd done that, I managed to get onto the router, reconfigured it. Couldn't get no internet, so very strange. So I had to plug my laptop directly into the line, the lease line, and still no working. It looked like they gave me some duff information on the IP addressing. So as soon as I worked out that they gave me the wrong IP address, changed it to the correct IP address, could get onto the internet fine. Then I couldn't. Then the VPN wouldn't come up, so I had to try and figure out that. And that was because the one little setting had been misconfigured. And once I'd done that, they actually got onto the RDP. The terminal servers onto the server. And then the terminal server kept crashing. So every time they came to Outlook crashed. No one had bothered to tell me from the office that the other sites were having issue as well. So I was actually trying to troubleshoot an issue which the office already knew about and had a fix for. So after all that, yeah, I wish we hadn't got a bed. And it's one of those jobs where just everything you did went wrong, basically.
You know, lack of information sometimes is a bane of our existence, isn't it? People tell you the wrong stuff, and sometimes people tell you nothing at all. I had something very similar, possibly a couple of years ago now, regarding the screen problems that you had. I was setting up, in fact, I remember this well, it was about 2 days after Windows 8 had come out, and one of my clients at home was trying to install Windows 8 onto his computer. He got to the point where nothing happened, and after I went round there, I was doing exactly the same, just a normal install, and nothing happened at this one particular point. Sat there for ages, thinking it was waiting, thinking it was doing something, only to find out about 45 minutes later that he had an extra cable coming out of his computer, of his video card, which was in one room, and the cable, a HDMI cable, went right the way around the room, into the next room, onto the big TV in the living room. When I suddenly saw that, I said, "Where did this cable go?" He said, "Oh, it goes onto the TV in the living room." We went to the TV in the living room, switched it on, and there's the Windows 8 screen. I mean, that was just ridiculous. I've just sat on the computer looking at a black screen. So I can totally get it where you're looking at the... Yeah, the screens are switched. You're looking at the wrong one. You can't switch it back again. Get you in a right mess. Dual screens are great, but sometimes they can be just a bit of a pain. So, yeah, I mean, what we can go on to next is, what is this show all about? I mean, the title, Admin, should give some of us a clue. And you may twig onto the pun of the username and password of most routers. So overall, over the next several shows and onwards, what are we going to be talking about? What's this podcast really about?
So what's this show going to be about? Well, I think it's going to be about servers, networks, VPNs, WANs, anything really in the kind of corporate world of IT, small businesses. Just a place where we can come along, chat, what we've been up to, stories from the trenches, bit of tutorials. People want to give us feedback or give us topics to talk about.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, just going on our backgrounds, I would definitely say that you are a lot more sort of server based than I am. So no doubt it'll be you can go as technical as you want, and if people out there think it's more technical than they like or less technical, then just let us know. But we'll talk about whatever you want us to talk about as well.
Yes, yeah, so there's two British guys talking about computers already. So, I mean, you've probably heard of me on a couple of shows before. I've been on the Podnuts Daily and the Server Show. So I basically put a shout out on the Mike Tech show, and that's how Andy, how he kind of met, kind of through Mike. To and I wanted to make a podcast, which I couldn't find anything about. I haven't really found anything out there yet, which will hopefully this podcast is going to be about. So this is the first show. I thought we'd talk about how I troubleshoot servers or how I go about fixing issues. So the first thing,
I mean, we're going to have, you know, we've all had phone calls, haven't we, where somebody says, come and help quick, the server's down. You know, what exactly does that mean? And the client themselves probably don't know anything about servers. They just think it's down, it's not working. So when you arrive on site, what would you do when someone just says the server's down?
Yeah.
What would you do to sort of make your first step? Where's the first place you'd look at?
Yeah. The first thing I'd say is, has anyone changed anything? What's changed? Have you done anything different? Has something happened today? What normally doesn't happen? I'll tell you a little story to let you know why I think you should always ask this question. Is that about a year ago, I troubleshooted just something for 2 days because someone had made one change. So the story goes is that this is a company that's got about 100 remote sites, and these remote sites have got a little server, and their head office has got an internet connection about 100 meg pipe out into the internet. And they were saying in the morning and in the afternoon for about an hour, their internet connection goes really slow, and because they have this connection where they were running their VoIP phones over it, so they had their phone system was in the cloud, so it looked like something was eating all the bandwidth up. And the first thing I said, have you changed anything during this time? When is this happening? No, nothing's happened. So I spent a further an hour looking at what this could be. So I used some monitoring tools to look at the bandwidth usage, and you could see at this time, when they were saying it, that the link was getting saturated. So I said, are you sure nothing's being changed? No. So then I had to do some further investigation. Have you heard of port mirroring before on a switch there, Andy?
I haven't, no.
So basically what it is you can monitor the port, so you can basically replicate what's coming out on the port. So what happens is I worked out which port on the switch the WAN connection was coming into, the router was coming into, and what you can do is you can put that whatever comes on that port to another port, and you can have a bit of software which basically looks at that port, and you can see what traffic is on that port. So you can then define who's using all the bandwidth up. And I traced it back to someone's machine in the office, and it was one of the SQL admin guys, and they were basically doing a database query to 100 servers between these two, once in the morning and once in the evening, and they were pulling all this information back. And I went back to the guy and said, you know, you said that you haven't changed anything. He goes, I said, are you running a query at these times? He goes, oh yeah, that reminds me, yeah, I have, I changed that. I started doing that Monday morning. So it took me 2 days to get that information back, get that information to work, sorry, to get to that point of time. So I wasted 2 days of my life trying to solve this issue when I asked, have you changed anything? So
well, I bet, yeah, I mean, I've been there. I bet everyone else listening to the show has been there as well. You know, it's important to find out information. Sometimes you get bad information. Sometimes people lie. I think in his case, maybe he was just didn't think, you know, possibly. But that's interesting you say about monitoring. Now, that switch that you were monitoring the port on, it's obviously not a £10 switch.
No.
From Maplin.
No, it's a it's a managed switch. So
a managed switch, yeah.
So it's not. There wasn't a layer 3 switch. It's just a layer 2 switch. So something you can either go onto a web browser or going onto you can telnet onto and do the command line. So they cost about £200 in the UK for a cheap managed switch, which I think is good because you can do things like managing ports. You can do the bandwidth. You can see. You can lock ports down so people can't come along, plug things in. So I was going back to monitoring. I like to monitor. A good thing is to monitor everyone's networks as a managed service is what we do. So we can see when a server goes down, or they say, oh, the server's down. What do you say? What do they mean? what is a slowdown? Do they mean they can't get the internet? They can't access their emails? They can't access their files? So we always provide for our managed customers, we monitor their servers. We use a bit of software called PRTG, and that basically does things like it pings it every 10 seconds to see if it's alive. It makes sure that the disks are not filling up, losing, or if their disks are getting defagged. If there's any errors in the event log, if any services stopped. So it's good because if their disk fills up, we know about it before they do. So we can obviously say, look, we can see your disk filling up. You need to clear some files down. So it's always good because we always find the problem before the customer knows about it. So it's always good to have some sort of monitoring solution. But I think that's going to be enough for another podcast about going all different ways we monitor. But the first thing I do is definitely look at the monitoring screen. I always tell the guys, look at the monitoring screen. What's the issue? Is anything on there down? Anything you can, which anything in red? And if not, next thing is to dial onto the site, see if you can get onto the server, and then look at the first thing I look at is the well. What do I look at first? And I think I look at the task manager. See if there's anything. If the do you know about the task manager? I'm guessing you do there, Andy. On the old, getting on the Windows machines.
That's right. Yes, I mean the task manager and the processes that are running. They're very useful to use, aren't they? I use them a lot myself. You can tell if viruses are there or if anything's taken up a lot of CPU usage. So yeah, I mean, so how would you use that? Would this be on the task manager on the server?
Yes.
Or on the workstation?
Well,
so on the server.
I'd mainly define that. Is it an issue with the computer? Is everyone being affected, or is it just one person? If it's one person, you obviously go to the PC. But if everyone's saying, well, let's say like this situation, they say that their emails are down. No one can get into Outlook at all. Or their so mm-hmm. I'll go onto the server, load up task manager, just make sure that there's nothing. The CPU's not running at 100%. You can look at things like the RAM usage or the networking. On the networking, it's quite good. It also shows you, they definitely in 2008 and R2 Windows 2000, you can see what the network usage is. And if there's nothing outstanding in there, if it is something running at 100%, I normally kill it by ending task, or sometimes like the antivirus can get screwed up. And that's the issue I had today with the Outlook. It's one of the semantic processes was running at 100%. As soon as I killed that, everyone could get back into their emails again. So from there, I would then go to the event viewer. This is where I would next go to see if there's any issues. This is a brilliant place to go to. This is where my next go to is. If you go to event...
So if it is... It's one of those things that myself and I think a lot of other people possibly neglect to look at. Now, I know that it's an abundance of information, especially if you're having problems. But also, when you look at it, it can be very daunting, hard to understand what it actually means. It says there's an error code 587 or something. You know, what exactly does that mean? So if you brought up the event viewer, and you see a load of red everywhere, then where would you start?
Yeah, the good thing is first of all, has good housekeeping. We always like to monitor the event viewers. We don't like seeing any red or yellows in there, so because it can be a bit of a muddy waters. So there could be an error what's been written to that error since the server was started. So whenever I put a new server in site, a server on site, I always go through and make sure that there's no errors after it's been installed, so that when we come to troubleshoot, there's no... All the new errors are something new, which is happening today. So I also make sure the guys on our help desk check the server at least once a month to make sure that they're still being clear, so there's no errors or warnings in there. Because like, you could get things like... A lot of errors, like we're going back to the email server again, is that sometimes there's corruption in the background, but unless you're monitoring the event view, you're not actually seeing any issues. because there could be some corruption on some email that someone had, doesn't look at ever again, but it could be getting worse and worse and worse and could be causing a bigger picture in the end. So the event view is all you want to see when on a good working system is the white little information. You don't want to see any yellows or red. So in the event viewer, you get there's normally five different things. The main one you want to look at on the main server is application security and system. Application are things what are installed on the app on the server. So it could be things like the SQL server, your Exchange server, your backup exec, your backup software. You then got security, which is like where your security logs go to. Like if you've got auditing set up, if someone tries to access a file, then you can put it so it puts an event in there. You then got the system, with where all the system logs go. So if your disk is filling up or there's errors with DLLs, that's where you find it. So if you've got a problem, which has started in 24 hours ago, I would definitely look in the event viewer and looking at these events. So say if you get an error one, so I've got in my event viewer one of my servers, I've got one where it's got a little error and it's saying backup started, no target could be found. So it's obviously trying to run some sort of backup in the background, which is not happening. So quite good if you get the ID, the event ID 561, Google it, see what people say, and then go from there really, and just see if you can troubleshoot it from there. So you want to make sure there's no yellows or reds. So I think what else I can say about the event viewer.
Well, I'm looking on this machine that I'm on here now, and I am having. Let's have a look here. So I've got a red one, which says critical. So that's not that good. But let's have a look, see what it says, and see if we can figure out what it is. This was today. Source kernel power and event ID 41. So no doubt if we looked up event ID 41, we'd have some kind of answer with that. I'm just looking down at the general details here. Down the bottom there in general, it does say a little bit of a description. It says the system has rebooted without cleanly shutting down first. This error could be caused if the system stopped responding, crashed, or lost power unexpectedly. Thinking back, I think I know what caused that, actually. So that's basically if you don't shut down properly. So that's what this critical error
is for. Yeah, I mean, you can go to the Windows Update, also the Windows event here. It's like, if you've got a problem where a machine might have restarted in the middle of the night, you can go into the event view and see when this happened.
Yeah. That's a good way of doing it. Then you can tell what time it was, and you could possibly tell did it shut down by itself when it wasn't supposed to, even if there was Windows updates that were going in at that time, or maybe if the Windows updates failed. I mean, no doubt you get an event log if a Windows update fails, which could be useful to do. So there's quite a lot of things there, isn't there, within... I just want to go back and ask a few things about what you were talking before we move
on. Sure, go ahead.
About the monitoring. Now, you monitor on the server, but you're remotely monitoring that information. Now, you said that you were, like, doing things like pinging the ports every 10 seconds and things like that. Now, in the bigger picture, does that take up a lot of bandwidth, either locally within the network or back using the WAN connection back to yours? Is it so small it's insignificant, or does it actually take up a bit of bandwidth? And is it worth, you know, the sacrifice?
Yeah, it doesn't take any bandwidth up at all, really. You won't notice it. There's so little packets happening on those. We basically have a little agent on each of the servers, and they basically pull back every 10 seconds to our monitoring solution. If our monitoring solution doesn't get a message back from the server, we get a notification. Then every half an hour, a check for the disk space. every hour we'll go through the event log and then check if there's any been any errors in the event viewer, and then it pings them across to us and emails us. So going back to, is there anything else you want to ask about the monitoring?
Yeah, I was going to say as well, I mean, one of the popular programs to use instead of Task Manager is something like Process Explorer.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, you know, use that myself. It gives you a lot more information, but how can Process Explorer help you diagnose anything running in the background that's perhaps hidden? Where would you start with that one?
Using Process Explorer?
Yeah.
I've used it a past couple of times, but is that like where you can go in, set on a, so say if you've got like a executable, it will then tell you what DLLs are running off that one file, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah, that's what I've seen it being used for before, and I've used it myself. You know, there may be some of the, for example, Explorer.exe may have several processes running within that, and one of those processes could be some kind of infection. So you could use that to say, you know, that shouldn't be there or that doesn't look right. You know, something run within Explorer which is running the CPU at 100% and things like that. So I just wondered if you use Process Explorer over Task Manager or whether you just use what tools you have at hand.
Well, I'd use Task Manager, but if I get major performance issues, I'd look at that, because I've had it in the past where DLLs have been stored in the wrong drive and there's like latency problems where like it's like on a bad sector or whatever, and you can see when you're running the process, you can see that one of the DLLs is just sitting there timing out before it. So when I basically just deleted that DLL and recreated it, worked perfectly again. So I forgot about Process Explorer. I haven't used that for a number of years.
Yeah, I found it could be a very useful tool. So I just wondered if you used it on servers. Also, another thing is it, I don't know if it's licensed for servers or not.
Yes, it's a SIS internal thing, so you can use it anywhere.
Okay.
You'll probably get feedback saying you can't, but I'm sure you can. The other thing about going back to the event viewers, going back to see where things happen is, I was talking about the main five of them. In 2008 R2 and Windows 2012, you can access actually more event viewers and just that one thing. So do you know how to get to the event viewer there, Andy? There's a couple of ways I go. Normally I go right click my computer, go to manage, and then go to event viewer, or you can go event viewer dot esc or whatever it is. You can run a command, can't you, from the run command. You can run a event vwr.msc and that then brings it up.
Yeah, normally I would just hit the start button and in the search box just type event. And usually it's top of the list there.
So in that you can see your application security setup and system. But underneath that, if there's another little thing, if you plus it, you get all the other ones. So on this one, on this server I'm looking at, you got DFS replication, directory servers, DNS server, Microsoft Windows, and then you got things like backup. So there's loads of things. Pardon me, you can go in there and look at those files. So if you've got a problem with Exchange or something, you can go into those, into a certain folder for each of those. So it's very powerful, that event viewer. The other thing which you may want to, what gets recorded in the application is this, if a service stops. So going back to my issue with maybe this customer got a problem with their email, it could be that the information store service has stopped, and you would get an event in the event viewer what tells you that service is stopped. So what a service is that, you know, when you run an application on a Windows PC, it's in the foreground so you can see it happening. On a server, obviously you don't want to be logged, you don't want the server to be logged in. You can run it in the background, and what a service does is run that application as a service. So it runs in memory, so you don't have to actually have it on the screen. So to go to, if you go right click my computer and go to manage again, there should be a thing under there where you can go to services.
That's right. Yep.
Under configuration, you click on services and you see a whole list of services, and at the top it says startup type. And what I normally do is, the first thing I do when I go into service, click on that startup type and sort it so it's done by automatic.
Okay, so automatic at the top. That's a good way to start.
Yeah. So these are, yeah. So this basically shows you all the services what should be automatic. Okay. And this is one of the first thing I do really. And if you scroll down, if you see on the left hand side, if it says automatic, next to it you see there should be a column called status.
Yeah, that's right.
And that should say started. And it, if it's not started, it'll be blank. So with this like issue with like with this Exchange server, you get a thing called MS Information Store, and normally that should be started. And in our case, let's say that would be that could be stopped. So the first thing I do is right click on that, click on start, and then it will go off and start the service in the background, and then start that service, and then hopefully they can get back into their email.
That's a good way. That's a good way. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, when you just look it in Task Manager, and you look under applications or processes, application just has the visual things that you look at as well, doesn't it? But processes may just have the file names of those programs that are running in the background. But that's a big difference to the services that are running, isn't it? Because there's a lot. I mean, I'm just going through the list of services on this standalone Windows 7 machine I've got here.
Yeah.
And there's a whole host of them. There's a lot of things running, some of them not running.
Yep.
And all these things are hiding in the background.
Yeah, if you double click on one, it brings a little dialog box up, and it will say things like path to executable. And that will basically tell you where that what service that's actually starting. So you can actually see that. You can actually look at that exe file and then look in your task manager and see if it's running. So it could be that one of those services crashed. So you could then look at that. Like, let's say if I have a look at one of mine at the moment, there's a SQL service. Let's say that's crashed. And if you click on stop, say they have a problem with a SQL server, you can click on that SQL service and click stop. And then you can start it again and then see if that helps. But if you click on stop, some of the time, I don't know if you come across it, you can see a little blue bar and it will never actually get to it. So what you have to do is actually kill that.
Okay.
You have to actually kill that. So what you can do is if you click on it and it's saying, let's say path executable, and this one is called sqlserver.exe, you then go into your event viewer, your task manager, find that, and then right click and kill that process. And once you kill that process, you should be able to then go back to your service manager and go to your services, and you then should be able to refresh, and you should hopefully see that it shouldn't say start anymore, it should say stopped. And then obviously you can right click and then click on start. So that's another way of what I'd do to troubleshoot an issue. Say if I had an issue with that SQL server, no one can connect to it, kill it and then start up again.
One thing that I think I've used the services for on a home environment is the print spooler. This is quite a common one. You know, there's 100 thing. You know, people press print about 100 times. You know, and it still won't print. But they just press print again, and the print. The print task just build up and build up and build up, and it's that one where you can't delete the queue of print jobs, but going into services, stopping the print spooler, that then allows you to clear the backlog of print jobs, restart the print spooler, and then hopefully you're away again. So that's something that's you know, more on the home side, that could be quite a common thing that people come across, but it's the same principle, isn't it? The same principle for an Exchange email server or anything like that on a server. It's the same kind of idea.
Yeah.
Stop it, kill it,
And workstations are very... There's things that overlap. You can see where things are. I mean, you get the event view on the PC and you get the event view on the services on the server. You get the... Again, you can use the task manager on both and you get the things like that. The next thing I'd do, if I couldn't find anything out in those in the event viewer or in the task manager or in the services, the next thing I'd do is have a look at logs is my next thing. Depending on what application's got the issue, so if it's like a SQL, Exchange server, and you've got a problem with your SMTP, like it's can't like the mails aren't going out. You can look at logs, so it's just look at knowing where to look for those files. So it's a quick Google search will definitely point you in the right direction. So like for an IIS issue, like a web server issue, or for an SMTP log, you can look and see Windows System 32 log files, and in there basically just be loads of text files, and you can see those, and you can just open them up with a notepad and see if there's any error messages in there.
Okay.
So
where would you find those logs? On a server or on a workstation? Are they in their own directory?
Yeah, well, as I said, depending on what the application is, you just have to do a quick Google and see where they are. I mean, not every application has them. But things like if you're having Sage Payroll or Sage Accounts, they all have their own little event logs. So it's just doing a quick Google to find out where they are, really, to find out if there's any logs you can go in there. They have loads of information there, which you'd never know what's being recorded in those.
Well, that's kind of its own kind of... For that particular application, it's like its own event log, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Just for that one application. I know what you mean. Log files, I mean, they're just, you know, simple little text files. Open them in Notepad, and they tell you whatever they need to tell you, and hopefully point you in the right direction. But that's certainly a way to go. So have you got anything else on logs? You know, what else could you do with log files? And another thing as well I was going to ask is, would you do the same thing like with an event log? You'd clear the event log, try and recreate the fault, and then read what errors you've got coming up in that. Would you do the same with log files? Would you delete log files, try and recreate the fault, and then look and see if any log files have been created again?
No, I don't normally delete them all the event, but I like to always keep them the same so I've got something to reference to. It's probably because of where the background I've kind of worked in before. So I always like you have to keep an audit really of what things are, so that's why I never delete any event logs. So you can always go back to them in case you need to, so you can see when problems started happening.
Well, I suppose they're so small that they're just not going to take up
any
space. We don't have 20 meg hard drives anymore.
No.
You know, so they're not going to take anything up.
No, or the 4 gig on the Windows NT box, and then someone doesn't move the log files via IIS and it completely fills them up.
That's it. That can go, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the next thing I was going to bring up here is... the performance monitor.
Yeah, so
now, I have completely truthfully here, I have hardly looked at the event monitor, but how does it differ from Task Manager? Task Manager can tell you things like how much memory is in use at that moment, how much CPU is being used at that moment. But what more, I mean, the performance monitor tells you that as well, but what more can the performance monitor give you, and how can you help it diagnose the problems that you're having?
The performance monitor is a lot more, you can pull a lot more information. You can do things like disk latency, how many CPU cycles are being waiting to be written to disk, what memory is being waiting to disk, how much is in the swap memory. There's so many things you can do in performance monitor. So what I always like to do once I put a new server in is with a monitoring, our monitoring tool is do a baseline, because we need to work out, because I like it when a customer phones up and go, oh yeah, my computer or our server's running slow, our application's running slow. What do you mean it's running slow? Is it running slow like it normally is? How bad is it running slow? So I always like to do a bit of a baseline. So I normally run up Perfmon and just let it run for a day or so you can basically record all the different things, and then you can compare it, because you can record it and then put it back into Perfmon, and then you can run it a later day, you can compare the two results, so you can see if the server's running slow or not.
Okay, I mean, people have all sorts of different ideas of what slow is. I have
yes.
Many people saying the internet's slow.
Yeah.
In actual fact, the internet's not slow, but the computer's just, maybe the CPU's running 100% on some ridiculous system somewhere or something like that. And the computer appears to be so slow that the internet appears to be so slow. And that's right. I mean, you can use. I mean, do you have performance monitor on a home machine, or is that purely on a server machine?
No, I think you can run perfmon. Just type in perfmon in the run command and see if it comes up.
I will do. I've got a resource monitor. That's telling you processes run, little graphs and stuff like that. Yeah. I'm going to try that.
So like this perfmon, you can do things like page file. You can see how much is paging it. The physical disk, you can there's so many things. You can see like the print queue, you can see how many print queues are waiting, the processes, what processes, how many processes are running. There's so many things. You can see idle time on the process, interrupt time, privilege time, processor time, user time. There's so much you can do that. I don't really understand how too much about it, but it's one of those places you can look if you think you're getting performance issues.
Okay, and can you narrow that down to network speed? Can you narrow it down to CPU speed, memory access, and things like that?
You can do so much with it. It's just, I was going to guys have a week at home, have a look, guys and girls have a look and have a play with it. It's really good. And as I say, what you can do is you can export it, and then you can then re-import it as well, so you can compare them.
Well, I think it's a really good idea to have a baseline, you know, especially if you just install the server, or you know, or even if you, I mean, there's going to be some times where you come to a server that already exists, isn't there? You know,
yes,
that you're taking over from somebody else, so you get it running the way you like. In fact, there's a question: would you do that? Would you take a baseline before you, you know, as you arrive, or would you get it running the way you like, make sure everything's smooth, then take a baseline?
Yes,
and take it from there.
So once it's all in and everything's up and running, and it's running for a couple of days, and then it's normal working, then that's when I do a baseline of it.
Yeah, that's a good time. So then you can refer back to that months, weeks, years later to see if when they say it's running slow, it is actually running slow. But yeah, I mean, everyone should check that out. I mean, I just found it here. I'm running a Windows 7 home machine, and just in the start search box, just perfmon, perfmon, just perfmon. And performance monitor comes up right at the time, so I advise everyone to check that out. Look it up online, Google it, even see if there's any YouTube videos on it. I'm sure that there is somewhere.
Yeah, there's loads of things out on the web about it. So
that's it. I mean, we've covered an awful lot there about just troubleshooting and different methods that we can use. I mean, have you had any bizarre, crazy events? I mean, I know you've had one just recently. You know, where say you haven't that, or somebody hasn't said something, or something that's been found out in the monitoring, or something like that.
Yeah, event viewers saved my life lots of times with things like disk getting low or disk corruption on Exchange databases. You go in there and it's full up with event viewers. Go in there and then just Google that event code, and I've seen them before, and that's it really. So
okay, so
I can't think of anything something off the top of my head.
So if there was somebody out there who was just taking over a server of some description, and they've been asked to look after it, how would you recommend they start doing monitoring or remote monitoring? And what kind of things would be the most important things to monitor, at least initially? You know, I would say some of the things I would look at first is has the backup. If they run a backup, and you're responsible for doing that backup for them, or at least monitoring has the backup been successful, then knowing whether the backup has run, failed. That would be one important thing that I would say you'd want to monitor. Now, what else could you monitor? Just on a basic level.
Yeah.
What else could you monitor remotely, and how could you do it? What software could you use to do it?
Yeah. The first thing I do when we take over a site is I always look for the event viewer to see what's, if there are any errors in there, and fix any errors before we take it on, really. Is any errors, and I'd also check what services are running. I want to know what's running on that server, if they've got any SQL databases, any Exchange databases. And then I'd go along and look at the disk space, make sure they've got enough disk space left over, make sure there's loads of space left. The software we use is called PRTG, and that's something you have located on your server at some central location. And we then basically install a little agent on the client server, and you tell it to report back to your main server. And the main thing we monitor on those servers are all the services. So any services which start set automatically, we want to be notified if that stops. The disk space, if it gets down to like under 5%, it gives us a warning. Get anything under 2.5%, give us an error. And then we say if any event viewers come in, anything, normally we say if anything like an error coming into the event viewer, we would want to be notified about it. So
one of the red ones, yeah, or the orange
red
ones.
The red ones. Because if we get all the yellow ones, we'd just be getting phone calls all the time, help desk tickets being curated. So yeah, services we monitor, the memory usage. So if it's like over 90% for over 5 minutes, or if the CPU's been at 90% for over 5 minutes, we would then get an alert back to us saying yes, this has happened. You might want to look at this. We also check out from that server. We also ping out onto the internet to a couple of sites to make sure their internet connection's up as well. So that's the main thing that I do on there when we're monitoring a site.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would say, and what about your that they must all have backups? Do you monitor if the backups are successful,
yeah,
or not successful?
Yeah, we basically backup. We just configure using that. We get them to send an email alert. So when the backup job's done, we send it. So it sends an alert out to our mailbox, our support mailbox, and then someone goes through this bit manual, but they go through an Excel spreadsheet and then ticks if the backup's been successful or not, and if it hasn't, we then dial on the site to have a look. Or if we don't get an email, we have to dial on the site.
Oh,
and
so
have
you
a
do
look.
It that way. And I know some backup, yeah, monitoring would email you if it's successful and email you if it's not successful.
Yeah, well, it emails you if it's not successful as well. But sometimes, like if a backup job hasn't started or something, or something crashes, you won't get an email alert saying it has or hasn't finished.
Okay, so if you get nothing, if you get nothing, their internet could be down,
yes,
for example. So that can alert you in a different way. So basically, yeah, there you've got monitoring services, which is a good thing to monitor, disk space, and memory usage. Make sure you keep that low.
So yeah, memory and CPUs.
And CPU, okay. What kind of percentage CPU would you sort of have an alert at?
We say about 90%.
Okay.
For over 5 minutes. If it hits at 90% for 5 minutes, there's something definitely wrong. Because a lot of CPUs will go hit 100% quite a lot of the time, but we say if it's more than 5 minutes, alert us.
That's right. I mean, if you do use something like Task Manager, even on your home machine, and then just load a program, for a very short period, it does hit 100%, doesn't it? As it's loading. As you'd want it to work hard to load the program as fast as possible, but there's not many things that would need 100% CPU for 5 minutes, is there?
No, that's like something like
wrong.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, something's crashed, or CPU, or the antivirus software's crashed or something. Yeah, I think we're just about done for the first show. I think we covered quite a lot there, haven't we, really, in the first show?
We really have, yeah. There's lots that we've gone through. What we're going to do with other shows is get onto different topics, talk about some different things. And also anybody out there who has any ideas for show topics, anything that they are maybe going to work on themselves in the near future or in the future, or anything they're just interested in, they can email in to us, ask us to talk about it, and hopefully, yeah, they can learn something from it.
Yes, any questions you want to ask us, maybe a topic future, you can email us at mail at admin@podcast.co.uk. You can email me at al@admin.podcast.co.uk, or you can email Andy at andy@admin.podcast.co.uk. So, yeah, don't know how the audio quality is going to be like. We're obviously still learning, so give us a break. Hopefully the audio is not that bad. So, so you got any more final words there, Andy, before we sign off?
No, I mean, I want to give a shout out to some of the people that's kind of inspired me to do a podcast. And basically that's everybody at Podnuts. Listen to all the shows. Back Steve Cherubino and Dore. I can't remember everyone's name off the top of my head. But also Mike Smith at Mike Tech Show. I listened to him for a long time. And Carrie Holzman as well. So it's a bit of a shout out to them for giving me, I don't know about you, but for giving me the inspiration to kind of do a podcast myself as well. So hopefully at some point we can get back onto some of the Podnut shows as well. I mean, you've been on a few.
Yeah, already. I have been.
So it's not out of the question I might go on a few. So yeah, so get in touch with us, email us. If there's anything about the audio quality, any constructive criticisms will be greatly received. Just to want to make it a little bit better. I mean, we're not in recording studios, are we? We're just on our computer desks at home, talking into the best quality microphones that we have. So yeah, that's great. So any final words from you?
Nope. See you next time, guys.
Okay, see you soon. Bye now. I never